This is a Hipsters of the Coast podcast. This Doom Travelers podcast is brought to you by Hipsters of the Coast, your destination for magic news, strategy, and entertainment. And by Cast Haven, where you can build your magic collection like a pro. Visit casthaven.com for more information.
Welcome to this week's episode of the Doom Travelers podcast, where we play Destiny and talk about magic. This week we'll be talking about all things Pro Tour Fate Reforged while playing some Crucible matches, some PvPs. Of course, some big things happened at the Pro Tour this weekend. Lots of Modern was played and some big announcements were made. By now you've probably all heard about the MTG Origins announcement. Origins being the new set coming out this summer, while we play musical chairs over here. So Origins is going to be the new core set, and in honor of the announcement of MTG Origins, we're going to go around and everybody's going to give me a one-line origin for their Guardian. So we'll start with Dave McNasty McCoy. Give us a one-line origin for your Guardian.
Bungie's random number generator.
Also joined by Matt the Obliterator Jones. Matt, what's your Guardian's origin story?
Many years ago in a faraway land.
That's the whole. All right, well, Matt's a robot, so that makes sense. We're also joined this week by Rob Proposal Colpitz. Rob, what is your Guardian's one-line origin story?
I come from the land that takes the place where Aladdin takes place. That's where I'm from.
That one sentence must have had a couple of commas in it.
You're from Disneyland is what you're
and
saying.
And the last member new to the Doom Travelers podcast is Josh Freddish. Mr. Freddish, what is your one line Destiny character Guardian origin? Sounds great. All right, so
I'm going to orbit now.
What right about then. Yours?
Oh, what right. Yours? So I'm Rich Stein. I'm Alamoth, and mine is a generic gunslinger story about how about a ex-punk rocker turned assassin for hire.
Damn.
So you're out for the man, huh?
Yeah.
Go get him.
Yeah, absolutely. So this week we're going to talk about the Pro Tour, which just ended a few hours ago. Modern was the format of the weekend. This will be the last Modern Pro Tour, at least until next year. It was almost not going to happen. Of course, we spent the last week or so talking about what decks were going to happen, what was the metagame going to be like, who was going to win, etc., etc. And now that it's all over, what do you guys think?
I think all of our predictions were obviously correct.
Yeah. yeah.
No, I think the
I definitely said great things about Amulet Combo, didn't I? About how it was going to like make a run and how two dudes who had never been in a Pro Tour before were going to be in the finals and it was going to come down to combo versus combo. I think if we just rewound it from last week, that's
I think so. I definitely didn't suggest that there'd be a dredge deck in the top eight.
No.
I don't think anyone said that.
There was a dredge deck played though.
There was a dredgevine deck, which did not do too poorly, but it did well enough in the modern section to get thrown up on their deck list page. And that ran Golgari, Grave Troll, and Vengevine. And Raph Levy, of course, runs his Life from the Loam deck, which is one of the most difficult decks, I think, to play in the format, which is probably why nobody else plays it. But it runs.
This is the best map in the game.
Yes, it is.
Are you sure?
It's definitely one of our favorites. So Dave, what did you enjoy most about the Pro Tour this weekend?
Well, I was on pins and needles when our good friend Abe Lusk went 5-0 to start the to start day one. Was super proud of him for doing that. A bunch of our other friends did pretty well too. Both Hugh Kramer and Richard Tan managed to day two with 4-4 records. And unfortunately, our other friend Brendan just didn't have a great day and did not make day two. So that was by far my favorite part of this Pro Tour, is seeing three out of the four friends who do really, really well. But honestly, this Pro Tour wasn't all that exciting. I have to say, like, the draft was fun to watch. It was just as interesting as any other draft portion of a Pro Tour has been. LSV had a really sweet game to open up the Pro Tour, a really sweet match to open the Pro Tour. His not very powerful blue-white deck. But other than that, there was just too much burn, and especially the first bottom round being a feature match of burn on burn. It just wasn't super exciting for me. I enjoyed watching what I did watch, but honestly, I was much more interested in how my friends were doing than watching than paying full attention to the matches that were actually going on.
Yeah, it's always exciting when you know people who are competing at the highest level of the game, and especially for the community here in Brooklyn. Sending a handful of players to the Pro Tour, mostly off the heels of Team Draft League, is a very exciting story, which I look forward to. Hopefully we'll be able to get some of those guys on in the near future to talk about their experience going to the Pro Tour. For all of them, I think it was their first Pro Tour, right?
Yeah, I think so.
So we'll see if we can make that happen at some point. I think the draft, you know, drafting is always exciting to watch, especially when you have a brand new draft format. There's not a lot known about the format yet. But the modern portion, especially on day one, seemed was a little let down. I was a little surprised looking through the results, looking through the coverage. A little surprised to see a lack of what I thought was diversity, really, in the format.
Oh, for sure. There was a huge lack of diversity. I think something like 20% of the field, 15-20% of the field was Obzon, and another 10-12% was Burn.
Yikes.
Yeah, it was not a very diverse format. Heavy ammo and I mean, when you look at... I think the top 8 is actually pretty indicative of... what the metagame looked like. You ended up having two burn decks, two Splinter Twin decks, three Obzon decks, and various combination of control-y and aggro form. And then you had the one Amulet Bloom deck. First timer, I believe his name was Justin Cohen, was playing. So really what it came down to is you had more than you had about half the format as Obzon and Burn. And then other mainstays like Splinter Twin and No Affinity made the top 8, but I'm sure it was there. And then you
had Brendan played it.
And then you had the off the wall. Everybody knew it existed, but nobody thought it would be this successful. Amulet Bloom deck.
Twin also made a pretty good showing, right? But
yeah.
I think there wasn't a lot of two decks in the top eight.
That's not.
I don't think there were a lot of twin decks, but they were good twin players.
Okay.
Getting destroyed right now. I read an interesting tweet from this guy who talks to Paul Jordan every once in a while. His Twitter handle is like QuickMTGStat or something like that.
Sure.
He said the 8 players played the Amulet Bloom deck. And of those 8, 5 made day 2. And then the 2 highest performing in terms of overall score were Sam Black and Justin Cohen, both of who 7-2-1 had a 7-2-1 modern record, and then the two others 8-2 modern with their Amulet Bloom deck, and then I assume the fifth didn't do so well because his record was not included. That's just half of the Amulet Bloom players had at least 7 wins in their modern record, which was just insane. Either that deck had a very high level of player skill in the tournament, or the deck was just super well positioned and nobody was ready to answer its land-based combo. Yeah, I was just shocked at how.
So how does combo do so well in an environment where literally one in every three people is running Thoughtseize?
Nobody expects it. Like, the part of being able to beat a combo deck is knowing how to disrupt it.
Right.
You have to know what to take with Thoughtseize. And I think it was Brian David Marshall said something on coverage that he said something to the effect of, if this guy had this match to play over again, it would go differently. Because he would know what to do.
So you think combo's not suddenly going to just take over the format, but it was just kind of a one-time deal because of the Pro Tour.
I mean, I think Splinter Twin is always going to be there, unless they ban it. I think this kind of combo, similar to Eggs, is the kind of thing where there's so much going on, you can't initially. You can't easily figure out what's going on if you haven't seen the deck played before. It's not easy to parse how this deck went. Same thing with Eggs, right? Eggs was the most ludicrously off the, like, vague way of beating you. It was slow and it was just terrible, but it was hard to understand immediately. And so if you don't know how this deck is going to kill you, you don't know how to disrupt it. And so you're very much at its mercy because you are highly, you're much more likely to disrupt the wrong part of the deck.
Right.
And it just seemed like some opponents weren't sure which card was more important. Was it Summer Bloom? Was it Amulet of Vigor? Was it the Primeval Titan they had in their hand? Like,
right.
What's the most important part of this combo? And I'm just not sure very many of them knew what the most important part was, and so after the match they had a better
right
answer.
So now that the combo, so now that this is kind of a known entity, should there be some expectation that it's going to start showing up more, or is it going to be more like the old Swans of Bryn Argyl deck where it kind of just takes everyone by surprise at one tournament and then everyone's like, oh, I see what you're doing there, and that's it, nobody really can play it anymore because it's not actually good, it's just surprising?
I mean, show up where? Like, where's it going to show up at, like...
Well, you know, you got Monday Night Modern, you've got PTQQ event, PPTQ events,
yeah,
you've got
like
the announcement
like
now that...
PTQs.
They announced over the weekend that one of the three World Magic Cup qualifier weekends is going to be Modern. So, I mean, there's still going to be Modern played, for sure. I mean, obviously not as much as there would be if, say, there was a traditional PTQ season coming up.
Super bitter about not.
Yeah.
There's just no opportunity for me to play Modern other than like casually with my friends. And
right.
Who the fuck has time to play Magic casually with their friends?
A lot of people do.
I think Amulet Bloom is probably one of the most complex decks that you could choose to play.
Yeah.
So I would imagine people like the interest, like the crazy way that the crazy combo finish that the deck can put together and might try and bring it to a modern tournament, but based on the huge number of decision trees that the deck has, I would imagine either these players are going to time out in real life or get thrown out of the tournament because they can't manage to win within the 50-minute
right.
Like, I remember when Sivka won with Eggs at the last Modern Pro Tour, Chase Kolpon brought Eggs to the Tuesday Modern at 20-sided and basically got almost booed out of the store because he couldn't finish on time. The deck just didn't win fast enough.
Right.
And so I would imagine that once people try to play this and realize how hard it is and how long...
So people shouldn't be too worried about this deck making a huge showing at their local...
I don't think so. I can't imagine that enough people are going to be good enough and have enough practice to play consistently, and will probably just give up on it very quickly.
When are they going to ban fusion rifles?
Well, the DCI seems pretty willing to ban things these days, so they might ban
fusion rifles. So sick of fusion fucking rifles. Oh.
About combo and modern, I think combo is always going to be a big part of modern. Combo
sure.
won the last Pro Tour, and combo won this Pro Tour. It was an all combo finals. I think that's part of it being a Pro Tour and professional Magic players being extremely intelligent and extremely skilled and the best pilots of combo decks out there.
Zone B lost.
But I mean, when you have a virtual turn 3 combo like Splinter Twin, where you can threaten to win the game on at the end of turn 3,
right.
Like that's always going to be a huge part. And if you have something as powerful as a turn 2 Primeval Titan, oops, you're dead. You're going to have people showing up to a Pro Tour smart enough and skilled enough to pilot that deck even when it doesn't manage a turn 2 Primeval Titan.
So is this a good thing for Modern to have this kind of a combo domination? I mean, combo doesn't is so let me rephrase it. Is combo always just going to be dominant at the Pro Tour, or is this because Birthing Pod is gone?
I think. Oh man, that's a question. Jones, do you have an answer for that one? Because I don't have an answer for that one.
I don't know. I'm probably too cranky about the format to be of much use. but I think that. I mean, whatever. Players are gonna play what they're really good at playing, and what they think's gonna win. I just got killed by another fucking fusion rifle.
Right, I mean, to build off my belief that pros are probably the best combo players out there. Channel Fireball and John Finkel et al. Played Infect this Pro Tour, which is basically a combo deck. Just a
deck.
Creature and pump spell based combo deck instead of a land or storm based combo deck.
Right.
Totally.
I think it's definitely fair to call that a combo deck, and I think the format's really it's a combo format.
Totally.
I mean, yeah, you took away the one card that made creatures compete with extremely powerful effects.
Yet a third of the field was still creature decks.
Still creature decks, but still the same color value decks. So essentially, you took out the pod and you still had the other creatures remain. But at the end of the day, you saw those creature decks kind of wilt in the face of the combo decks, like Jacob Wilson. Was playing a odds on aggro.
He just got house.
It was very light on disruption, and Yelgo Vigorzal shows up and turn 4 combos him out of the tournament. It was absolutely brutal. And when you have a turn 4 combo, a consistent turn 4 combo like Splinter Twin, there is no creature deck aside from Affinity that can manage a turn 4 kill. And even Affinity does it very infrequently. It's very hard to kill, or it's very inconsistent if you are going for a turn 4 kill. And yeah, when you have such strong combos, you're going to have...
You're in the lead.
It's not going to be creature deck friendly. Like, creature decks are just really bad at being combo. That's just the way it is. And there are no real control decks, which are probably your best answer to a combo deck. I think this is, you're right, it's a combo format. There aren't really any other decks that can consistently beat combo, so.
Well, I guess on the plus side, this is the last modern tournament at the pro level for a while, right? So is this kind of why Wizards is trying to move away from having modern at the highest level, because a lot of people were very frustrated having to watch mirror matches one after another, and also with the just the kind of the boring stuff like Matt was talking about. It doesn't look good on camera, right, to have these bloom decks kind of just sitting there, and that's a, you know, kind of it's not exactly like eggs, how bad eggs was, but it's certainly not great.
But is it because the field is so small that you're going to get a certain number of, you know, and there's so many teams that play, they, and all the, almost everybody on the team plays the same deck, right? So you're right. You're just, even if it's standard, if it was legacy, like whatever the constructed format's going to be, it's going to be a lot of people playing the same decks.
So you think it's just the Pro Tour warping the metagame because it's pro players and there's only 200 of them, and so on and so forth.
Totally. I don't think. I just don't think there's enough. How many people play in the Pro Tour?
Like 300.
About 300, at most.
300. And so all the very, very best players are on teams. Yes.
Yep.
So those teams are probably going to represent a very high percentage of people that that win and make day two. And so I just think that it's totally just. The meta is warped by how few people there are and how many people work together who are exceptionally good professional players. Not just pros, but like the best.
I mean, I think that's an entirely valid point. I mean, of course, there are tons of really good players that don't do very well at the Pro Tour, but yeah, I mean, in terms of the decks that are present at the Pro Tour, it's definitely slanted towards decks that the pro teams choose. Zone B
lost. I also think that that all the teams like sort of assume what all the decks are going to be, and then jam them against each other. And so I think all the teams probably test with all the same decks, and then choose which one they think is the best deck against the other decks, or like, you know, try to meta tweak one of the decks to beat what they assume the best deck is going to be. And there's probably very few teams that are making rogue decks just to, you know, take advantage of all the things that the other teams are testing. So I think that's always going to lead to, you know, I had to think for a second now. This game
kind
was very
of
complex.
A,
man,
kind
I miss with Nova Bond all day.
So I guess you end up with kind of an inbred format is what you're saying.
For sure. It's not like a GP where there's 20 billion decks.
Right. So, let's say Wizards comes around in a few months and they release the Pro Tour schedule for 2016 and there's no modern Pro Tour again. Do you think they'll be as big a... So we're saying there's not going to be as much of a appetite for... But if there isn't as big an appetite for a modern Pro Tour next year, then is modern still a important format?
I don't know. The most interesting constructed format for me is Legacy, and there's never a Legacy Pro Tour, and it doesn't make Legacy less important or less interesting to me.
Neutralized. Yeah. I don't know. I think modern has some really deep flaws.
Zone C. Yeah. Neutralized.
That Wizards may or may not be in a position to address. It has some serious power level flaws. It has some serious support flaws in terms of professional play opportunities. Enemy captured. And at this point, it just doesn't seem like a healthy format or a particularly well supported format. That makes me sad because I really enjoy modern. It has a higher power level than standard, but it's just such an uneven power level. Like, there are so many super powerful cards, but not spread out. Like, there aren't, you know, they're not spread out between the colors and the archetypes very well. And, you know, that just leads to unbalanced formats where you see two different combo decks facing off in the finals of a Pro Tour and a ton of Obzon decks. It's honestly, Obzon was the creature deck of choice because they just took the best creatures in Modern and put them in a deck together. That's kind of what Pod was, with a few more utility creatures. They just took out the Pod and the utility creatures, and
Obsidian was a deck instead. Pre-pod too, right?
Yeah, it was. It was called Junk.
Was, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's definitely
Junk
was
just a better version too.
Yeah.
Jeez, look at that guy on the top of our roster with 33 kills. That's insane.
Yeah, it's a good thing we
should talk about magic. So.
He's not. Yeah, he's not talking about magic.
Yeah, but our scores wouldn't be that different if we weren't.
So all in all, the Pro Tour was all right, not too exciting, and is kind of leaving a sour taste in people's mouths for Modern, possibly. And I think a lot of that has to do with what Matt's talking about, which is that there just really isn't going to be any more high level Modern at this point. So, kind of who cares?
I mean, it's like travel to some faraway GP to be able to play a format that you don't get to play that often.
Right.
You know, like there's like local.
Well, that's the same.
We have one on Tuesdays, but it's like
that's going to kind of make it go the same way as Legacy then.
Yeah.
Possibly, I mean, which I don't think that's what Wizards wants though.
No, I also don't think when they have Standard constructed at the Pro Tour that it's any more or less interesting. It's like the same thing. It's like a shit ton of 3 or 4 decks and then some rando other decks, and it's like not cool. I, you know, as a guy who used to really love Constructed, I don't care when it's at the Pro Tour, and I'm really interested in the draft decks that people come up with.
Yeah,
there's some wacky shit that happens, and it's really cool and stuff that I've never seen and never thought of, especially since it's so early in the format.
Right.
There's a lot of things that I haven't considered yet. And
was there anything specific that you caught from the drafting that you picked up on that you might employ Team Draft League?
Not specific. No, I just can't remember. I watched so much draft that I have no memory of any of it other than LSB using Ascendancy really well a couple of times and it being pretty funny.
Right.
I mean, I think in terms of the drafts, watching the drafts, I think reaffirms what we were talking about last week.
Bravo,
when we were talking about how the first pack being forged has impacted our mana bases.
Yeah.
It definitely seems that the pros have adopted a two-color first strategy. Like Luis Scott Vargas drafted a white-blue deck for all things, which was insane. And all of the drafts that I watched were pros really, really being disciplined and sticking to two colors and refusing, even at great power level cost, to go into a third color until maybe the middle of pack two. I think Luis, when he got past that Jeskai Ascendancy, I think he had to think really long and really hard whether or not he actually wanted to play red, but the temptation, he just gave into the temptation to him. Played red because he loved Jeskai Ascendancy.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's
fun. The vast majority of the pros seem to be two color decks, and that has been my experience in this last week of drafting. They were forged. It's been two colors through, well, hopefully one color, but two colors through. They were forged in the first pack of cons, and then maybe a third color if you have a powerful enough card to justify it.
So I wonder if we can put the nail in the speculation coffin and just say that Dragon's Attack here is probably going to be a two-color set.
That's definitely possible. Maybe it'll be a no-color set, but I mean, don't quote me on
a no-color set.
Probably not.
That would be very interesting.
Didn't you know
morphs.
Was
only morphs.
Only morphs. Yeah, it's going to be real fascinating.
There was one super highlight that nobody's mentioned about the Pro Tour that I would like to, you know, I watched the whole weekend rooting against Ari Lax, and it seemed like I didn't even need to because he did so poorly, and I'm grateful, personally, very grateful for that.
Yeah, Ari.
Not a
fan. Ari did not do so well.
I know why you don't like Ari, man, and so. In terms of celebrating your victory, the Spaniard, Leon, whatever, and I forget
Leon.
The rest of... Yeah,
yeah.
He definitely celebrated when he won, but he did it in a much more respectful manner. He did a fish pump, He pumped a fish and then after pumping a fish he pumped his fist and then posed for the camera and then celebrated with his friends.
That's great.
He accepted a concession fairly gracefully and then celebrated away from the table. And that, that seems to be the sportsman-like way of celebrating. You still celebrate, you still smile and pose for the camera, but you're just not a dick to the person you're standing
with. Oh, he didn't, like, unzip his fly at the table and wiggle it around in front of his opponent? That's weird.
Basically, yeah.
What anyway, a gentleman.
That was a, I think, a good way of celebrating his victory, as opposed to...
Yeah, I agree.
Seems
controversial
much nicer.
Way, I guess, that's already celebrated.
You could just say inappropriate and shitty way.
celebration.
Double down! Finally, I stopped being terrible for a moment.
God, we have not been doing very well this whole thing. What about those of you who aren't speaking? You should have higher scores with the help. You guys should all have 7,000 points each.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, get your act together, Rob and Josh. Get your act together. Anyways, moving on from the actual Pro Tour and Modern itself, I want to talk a bit about the two announcements that they made at the Pro Tour this weekend. The first of which affects organized play. The World Championship of Magic, as you guys should know, a 24-player tournament held over the course of 2 days, many rounds of Magic, many pro points to be given out, best of the best players in the world, has been won in back-to-back years by Shenhar.
He's good.
They have announced that for next year they are making a few changes to this tournament. Most notably, the tournament is moving to PAX. It is now going to be wrapped up with all of the other festivities at PAX Prime that are Magic related. And also a few changes to the invitation structure. The Rookie of the Year invitation has gone away. And has been replaced by an invite given to the player with the most Grand Prix Pro points over the course of the year. And they also some geographic restructuring of how the invitations are given out. I think North America is now going to get fewer invitations.
America is getting more.
Okay, more invitations. And Japan has been rolled into Asia at large. For the purpose of invitations. So, my initial reaction was that moving the World Championship to PAX is amazing. It's going to do wonders for the World Championship. And that I'm really not concerned with the invitation changes because I'm never getting invited.
Yeah, agreed on that. I could give two shits about the invitation.
I think in terms of the invitation distribution, they just realigned it with the where the players came from, like where the like the demographics of the game.
Right.
North America is the most the place where the most players play, and they just they just realigned the invitations with the population to play the game. And also separating out the world and the Players' Championship, or whatever they call it now.
The World Cup.
Thank God they did that, because that was just too much Magic at one time, and those poor people that had to play both tournaments, I can't imagine staying sane the 4 or 5 days competition. Like, that just seems insane to expect people to.
Yeah,
they're gonna have separate identities, and they're not gonna, like, try and kill the best players by making them play 5 days in a row.
Yeah, I agree. It's going to be nice. Matt, any thoughts?
No further thoughts on this. It's actually a topic that is of very little interest to me.
I think, the big thing, though, with PAX is that it should be... the World Championship really ought to be the showcase event, right, of the Magic year. if you want to show someone the highest level of Magic the Gathering, you should be able to say, well, this is it, right? This is it. It's the World Championship. Here it is. These are the 24 best players in the world. This is how they got there, and they're going to play. And there kind of wasn't a whole lot of fanfare around the event to match that sentiment. And now that it's going to be moving to PAX, I think you're going to see... you might see it shifted to be treated similar to the way large League of Legends tournaments that are held at PAX and or stuff like Hearthstone, whose championship is held at BlizzCon. Go on. I have a follow-up question, but let me know what you think about that.
Yeah, sorry. Interrupting is one of my bad habits. But I think what this in my wildest dreams what this could turn out to be is a separate identity for the Players Championship and an increase in, since it's at PAX, an increase in viewer participation. So like back in the day, the Invitational used to be open to the public and you could come watch the players play.
Get them next time.
And now that it's at PAX, where everybody, you know, it's a huge convention. Theoretically, they could have people, PAX attendees, watch the game as well.
Well, they better.
Maybe with the increased importance, you can hopefully get back the invitational cards that the winners get to.
I mean, look, I want to see the whole thing. I want to see the invitational cards. I want to see those pro player trading cards they used to have. Because you can now you're gonna have all these fans of the game at PAX. All of the 24 best players in the world, right, are going to be there, and all these fans of the game are going to be there. So it's a real opportunity for like a meet and greet kind of thing, right? Meet your favorite pro player, get them to sign some of your cards, sign some tokens, sign their trading card, do this. You know, it's a opportunity for Wizards to really showcase the highest level of the game in a way that they haven't been doing. And of course, making it a spectator thing, having the matches played out in public, in a venue where they can really let people watch and see what's going on, is going to be... it's going to be a challenge, of course, because for the obvious reasons of the difficulty of having a card game be a spectator sport, but Hearthstone gets it done, it's time for Wizards to step up and turn this into a big thing. I'm looking forward to it. I hope the coverage is fantastic. One of the things they hinted in the announcement that the World Championship is going to be part of a larger event, Magic event going on at PAX Prime. PAX Prime takes place at the end of August, only a few weeks before the release of the fall block in September. So I think it's probably something to do with the new two-block paradigm, but could be something even bigger. I guess we'll just have to wait to find out. I suspect
Magic movie?
Sorry?
Magic movie?
Yeah. Yeah, maybe they're gonna announce version 5 of Magic Online.
Well, that too.
Why would they need to make version 5? Version 4 is sweet.
Matt, unpopular opinion, Jones.
No, I was trolling. I hate version 5 or 4. It's the worst thing ever. That's why I don't play Magic Online very much.
But it should be great. And capture all zones. So speaking of PAX Prime, the other announcement that they made involves something that we'll learn more about at PAX East in just under a month, and that is the announcement of Magic Origins, which I hinted at the top of the podcast. Magic Origins is going to be the summer set. What used to have the core set spot Of course, with the creation of the two-set paradigm, the core set is going away. It looks like Magic 2015 was the last core set, so I hope you enjoyed it if you're a fan of the core set. If you're not, then you should be thrilled by the fact that it's going away. In the meantime, Magic Origin is the new product, and... Sorry, did someone want to say something?
That was Josh dying, probably.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I think Josh died.
Zone A neutralized.
Well, Josh and I are going to take Zone A over here. Nope, Josh died. Enemy captured Zone C. So Magic Origin is going to be, I guess, a story-driven set. We don't have too much information. All that we were given, really, to go on was pictures of two planeswalkers, what they look like today, and what they looked like before they became planeswalkers. And those were Jace and Liliana. Pretty interesting juxtapositions. For those two characters.
The clothed Liliana versus the not clothed?
Yeah, Liliana wearing what looked like scholarly white robes, and Jace wearing what looked like some kind of traveler's garb.
I think Liliana's garb was a healer.
She was a healer. Alright.
What they said on the stream.
Right, okay. I wasn't able to catch the stream, but I also believe somebody reported that the other three planeswalkers highlighted in the set are going to be Nyssa, Gideon, and Chandra.
Correct. Yeah, so what they said on stream was that Origins was going to be a set about the planeswalkers and their...
heavy ammo on the way.
Who they were before they were planeswalkers and how they became planeswalkers. So the story is based around what these planeswalkers were before their spark ignited and the events that led to their spark igniter. So whatever made Liliana decide to become evil and not wear clothes, or whatever made Jace decide to listen to the Spits and be sad all the time.
I love that comment.
character development, like we talked a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, exactly.
And storytelling, perhaps stripping the planeswalkers of their genericness and putting them in a context in which they will change, which will be interesting. Maybe we'll learn that Jace actually started out life as a woman, but decided he wanted to be a man, and now we all accept him as a man.
Could be.
Anyway, it sounds interesting. Like, the application of story to a core set is long overdue.
Yeah, I mean, it's something they've started trying to do for sure. Obviously, last year's core set really focused on Garrick's corruption with the Chain Veil.
Did that ever get resolved?
I have no idea.
I have no idea either.
Because the thing is, they never connected it to anything else. You know, like, yes, it was kind of a self-contained story, but, like, it wasn't involved in the rest of the Magic story. You know, he just was hunting them, and then we moved on to Khan of Tarkir. There's no
connection. Did he kill any planeswalkers?
He killed someone in the little teaser videos that they used between... rounds at on the Magic coverage, but
he didn't kill any canon planeswalkers as far as we know.
Zone B lost.
Waste of time.
Yeah.
Enemy capture.
What this definitely opens up the possibility for, though, is planeswalkers as character cards. You know, like,
right.
As creature cards. Sorry, as opposed to planeswalker cards. Which could theoretically be interesting.
A creature that turns into a...
planeswalkers.
Yeah.
Seems difficult to pull off, especially since Mark Rosewater spends a lot of time saying how hard and expensive flip cards are to make, and in order to justify making them, you have to make them a big theme of the set. so that doesn't, like, having only the Planeswalker characters be flip cards seems to be, it doesn't seem to be enough. If it's just going to be five cards out of the set, I don't know, based on Mark Rizwaters.
Yeah, I think as exciting as that would be, I would be very surprised if we had flip creatures into Planeswalkers. That feels like it would be a much more better suited for a supplemental product than it would be for a what's essentially the core set, right? But that said, this is the final core set. The core set's thing that's been with us for years, and this is it. It is now going away. So they got to do something exciting, right? Yeah, I don't know, Josh.
Yeah,
I don't know how you got killed by that guy. Yeah.
You, in fact, are not a friendly guy.
Yeah. Yeah, all gone.
Now you have zero.
Sorry, so Dave, you were gonna say?
Oh, totally. I just said maybe they'll kill Jace, I think, but I'm just fantasizing.
Maybe they'll reprint Jace the Mind Sculptor.
Oh, for standard.
And unban him in Modern. Since that's a format that doesn't matter anymore.
I guarantee it. Buy Jace right now.
I mean, this is the thing. It's the final core set, so they have to do something exciting, right?
I think killing Jace would be great.
They don't have to. But... Enemy captured zone C.
If they kill,
they kill Spider-Man, they kill Batman, they kill Superman. They'll just bring him back.
Let's just bring him back,
man. Buddhism.
But they just did that with Elspeth. They just had a death slash not death story for Elspeth, so I can't see them doing that with Jace as well.
She's a lady planeswalker, though. She's not the white guy that they based the franchise on.
That's true.
Elspeth
is not a white guy.
That's a good point. So PAX East is when they're going to announce more details about this new Magic Origins set. I'm looking forward to it. I'm hoping that there's going to be something splashy because it's the last core set, so... They're gonna feel obligated. I am worried that they might overdo it, especially when it comes to the pre-release for this set.
I don't know. I'm excited to pick my Planeswalker and get a seated pack of all Planeswalker cards.
Guaranteed Planeswalker. That's got to be the thing, right? Everyone gets a Planeswalker
Guaranteed card.
Everyone's pre-release promo will be a Planeswalker card. Well, anyways, PAX East is in 1 month. So between now and then, we'll probably hear nothing. and then at PAX East, we'll get inundated with likely information about Dragons of Tarkir, as they are wont to do at PAX East, spoil the spring set. They're kind of falling into a rhythm here, right? With PAX East being the spoilers start for the spring block now, what will become the spring block once we enter the two-block paradigm. And then using the San Diego Comic-Con panel to unveil the fall block. And then PAX Prime is going to be the spoiler start for the fall block and, of course, the World Championship. Honestly, I think the more Wizards has these high-profile events at high-profile conventions, it's only going to help to increase the reach of Magic the Gathering. Do you think you guys would be more inclined to go to conventions to see... bigger Magic events?
No. I mean, I just feel like I'm no to everything, but like I don't like watching people play Magic.
But I'm not even talking about people playing Magic. I'm talking about going and getting to talk to designers or artists or
What would I talk to the designers or the artists about?
Alpha team. Yeah, I mean,
I like to go to the artists and get them to like draw on little cards for me. I like to buy some of their art if they have it at a reasonable price for semi-poor people like me. I like to, I like to do that shit, but I can do that at GPs.
Right.
And since the only way that I'm going to get as a person who will never make a Pro Tour, the only way I'm going to get to play high level stuff is at GPs, and the ones that I'll probably do are most likely just team GPs. You know?
Yeah,
so
I mean,
I'll do that stuff there.
I've done the Comic-Con and the PAX events. They're not my kind of thing. Now that I've done one of each, and going to a Magic tournament to spectate at one of them is not something that I think I will ever do. I enjoy Magic coverage. I enjoy watching very talented Magic players play. Enemy captured zone A. I don't think I would want to watch them do it live in person. I think I would much rather have a good view of the board state from my computer or my television so that I can actually understand what's going on.
You know what? I would think it would be interesting to set up like a, I don't know, maybe they used to do this, like set up like a stadium sort of situation where you have seating and then you have things on a big monitor like at the Garden or something, you know?
Well, I think that's...
you could like sit, you could see the table down low, you could sit and stand, and then you could see everything on the Jumbotron too, you know, so you could like really get the sense of like, oh shit, that just happened, and stuff like that.
They used to have a similar setup like that for Pro Tours, when they had spectators at the Pro Tour.
Yeah, you can hear on a lot of the Pro Tours that Randy Buehler used to do. You can hear Randy Buehler chastising the crowd for cheering because the competitors might be able to hear them a couple of rooms down. That would be pretty cool.
But yeah,
If you could go watch it on a, screen with the commentators in front
zone
of you, but that doesn't seem to be what
they should be doing that though. You know, the way Hearthstone did their championships is they basically put the players in a glass box in the middle of an arena.
Yeah, make the players suffer.
And the players can't hear anything going on outside the box, and the fans are all outside watching. There's big monitors showing what's going on, and that's it. That's how you watch it. And I don't see any reason why they can't do something similar with Magic. We've had the technology to make portable soundproof rooms for a long time.
Heavy ammo inbound.
They should heat them a lot too when they're in there.
Yeah. I
think that'd be cool. There's nothing that's that exciting about watching.
It's not
coverage.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, like listening to the old Pro Tours where Randy Buehler and somebody else were sitting in front of a crowd and commentating. Like, they were interacting with the crowd, and that does seem pretty fun to have been a part of. But I don't think I would ever travel to go do that. Like, if I scoped out of the Pro Tour, sure. If the Pro Tour was 30 minutes from my house, maybe.
Yeah.
If I was already at PAX or already at whatever event or conference kind of thing, convention, there we go, that's what I'm looking for. Maybe I would do, but I'm not. I would never travel just to watch Magic.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know. I mean, Magic is something I watch. Like, we had all weekend. I went to drafts, and we had the Pro Tour on while we were drafting. So you weren't bored out of your mind just watching Magic. You were sort of participating by proxy, and that was interesting and fun. And it helped me, you know, you can kind of like do what the pros did, as cheesy.
Yeah. I think it's
really fun.
Definitely going to be a big challenge for Wizards to make this, to make Magic a spectator sport. I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility. I think there are ways that you could, that there's a way to present Magic so that people can watch it live and get into it, but it's got to be a fan interactive event. I don't think it can just be people watching Magic. there has to be a big, it's got to be a big production. And it'll be very interesting to see if Wizards does it. I hope they do, because I'm planning on going to check it out. if only to cover it from a journalistic perspective for Hipsters of the Coast. Kind of hope it's not terrible, since I'll be subjected to having to experience it. But even if it's terrible, I'll just get to write about how terrible it is.
Yeah.
But I'm a big fan of gaming conventions. I think they're a great opportunity for the community. And, you know, the problem with things like the way the World Championship used to run, with the World Cup and the World Championship being the same weekend, is that it doesn't really lend itself to giving people who aren't playing in the tournament a reason to show up.
Heavy ammo on the way.
For sure.
You know, like Bone said, like, unless it's down the road, there's no reason to go. Even to a pro tour, which for a while the pro tours weren't even open to spectators. And now they are again. And there's really, like, why would I go? What's the point of going to a pro tour tournament? What am I going there to watch? So if Wizards can address that in a positive way, then I think there's a lot of
potential. It would be sweet if there were, like, many GPs, you know, where you could go play too, you know?
Yeah.
That would be awesome.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of, I mean, basically what I'm looking at is like a mini Magic convention. With things for everyone. And, you know, the thing with an event like PAX is that they already have a reason for the community to show up. So the community has a reason to show up. Will they stick around and check out the Magic-related events in addition to whatever they normally would be checking out? I think that's the challenge right now for Wizards. I think it's a good idea for them to be doing this in a place where they don't have to convince people that there's a reason to go, because people are going to go for the other stuff that happens at PAX. So the challenge for them is to get those people interested in whatever it is they're going to be showing.
I think that in saying that I had a really good time drafting with my buddies and watching the Pro Tour, that might be a way to make it a much more interesting spectator sport, is if you got to go to this, like, mini GP. They had big monitors that were playing multiple feature matches that you could watch without, maybe without commentary, and you got to draft with your buddies at the, you know, like, so you went to something and it was more of an event. Like, I think that would be freaking sweet. I would consider going to those things.
That, that would be great. Dave, what would get you to go to one of those things?
Man. Yeah, I think it'd be really hard to get me to go watch Magic unless I was doing something else. I don't watch Magic coverage by itself. I'm always doing something else when I'm watching it.
Yeah, for sure.
And if I had, like, I don't think I'd ever travel to go only watch Magic. I would definitely already have to be there, and there would have to be something in addition to the Magic coverage, like interacting with the commentators. Like,
right.
I hate to keep harping on Randy Buehler's old, like, Pro Tour coverage, but, like, he was interacting with the crowd. Like, they were joking with the crowd, they were talking to the crowd, like, asking the crowd for, like, what should he do now, like, that kind of stuff. Congratulations, Jones, nice purple engram.
Hey, thanks, guys.
But yeah,
I can't wait to be a mode of light.
Yeah, but even with that kind of interaction, like, I would never travel.
Go on.
I just think, like, it would make listening to it more interesting.
Yeah.
While I'm at home doing something else.
Right. Yeah, I think.
What if it was like a GP or something, Dave, where it was like, or like a, you know, like, we had a top eight where the winner got to go to the Pro Tour or
regional,
something.
Say a regional PTQ.
Yeah.
I would, like, if I was at a regional PTQ at which the, like, a pro tour or some kind of high-level magic, other magic event was being held at the same place, like, I would probably go after scrubbing out, for sure. But I would already have to be there. And,
yeah, that's true.
I just, you can't convince me to watch magic coverage if I can't do anything else.
Right.
Like, there's a huge upgrade.
I keep thinking, like, they'd have to have a lot of planeswalker points, you know, it'd be like a 7x or something like that, you know, to get me to go there. Like, the idea of having the Pro Tour on and, like, the chance to get closer to participating in it yourself, even if it's still very unlikely, but while it's happening, you could potentially qualify in a side tournament for it. I think that would draw a lot of people to travel. Maybe not left. Huh?
They used to do that stuff. They used to have last-minute qualifiers. And they used to have cool pro tours. They used to have PTQs also.
Yeah, but it'd be cool if they had them not for that pro tour. But you want to be a part of the next pro tour? Why don't
right.
you?
There's a chance to qualify for the next one, sure.
Yeah.
Why not host preliminary PTQs at them? At the pro tour?
Yeah.
Yeah, makes sense. That'd be cool.
You know, you could run them like 32 man grinders. Because you can go play, you can play at whatever regional PTQ you want. It doesn't matter where you win your PPTQ. The more the
better. The only thing I like about the PPTQ is that it gets everybody to say PP at least 100 times more than they normally would. Otherwise, it's all terrible. The idea of just watching is not so exciting.
Right.
But playing and participating is very exciting. So, you know, I think you get it. It's just so much more interesting if you feel like you're a part of it rather than an observer.
I think there's a big opportunity to kind of have like a hybrid playing slash fan event going on at an event like the World Championship. Because you've got the World Championship going on, so you've got the best players in the world hanging out at PAX for this event. So why not have an event that's like a sealed deck tournament where you can go over and get LSV to look at your sealed deck before you submit your deck list and give you some pointers.
That'd be freaking sweet.
Right? Why not have, you know, a session where you can talk to Patrick Chapin about your deck ideas? Right, if Wizards wants to sell Magic as a spectator sport, you're not selling the game, right? Because you're going to have a tough time selling people on watching Magic. What you really have to aim for is selling people on the players. Make it so that they want to watch these players play Magic. And that means giving them a connection to those players. And I think that's what would get more people to A, show up to these events, and B, get people to actually watch more coverage, whether it's live at PAX or whether it's on your computer at home when you're drafting with your friends.
It's sort of like the same problem with the Planeswalkers where, like, we don't care about them, so they're not very interesting, and the story's not compelling. But if you give people the opportunity to meet and greet and hang with the pros, they'll have, like, Sock and the pros, and they'll mean something more to them.
Yeah. So, only time will tell.
It's all storytelling, man.
Only time will tell. Yeah, the story, the narrative, that's what people are interested in. So, hopefully they figure that out, and we'll see if they do. That's all the time we have for this week, unfortunately. So join us next week when we talk about cats.
Yeah.
I would stop rambling, but I don't know how to turn this off.
Come on, Rich.
How do I turn this off?
Hey Guardians, thanks for tuning in to the Doom Travelers Podcast, where we discuss Magic the Gathering while playing Destiny. You can find more at doomtravelers.com. or visit hipstersofthecoast.com for additional magic content. Thanks to Robert Kolpitz and Josh Gorfane for joining us in the Crucible this week, and congratulations to Pro Tour Fate Reforged champion Justin Cohen. For my co-hosts Rich Stein and Matt the Obliterator Jones, I'm David Bones McCoy. See you next time.